Welcome to Denver Community Church Online. My name is John Gettings, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Whether you attend one of our Denver locations on a Sunday or listen online, our hope is to be a group of people who are a just, generous community, practicing love in the ways of Jesus. As you listen to this teaching, allow it to begin a conversation with you and God, you and the Bible, and you and your community. If you have any questions about this teaching or DCC, email us. And if you'd like to help financially support our community and our partners as we give away 20% of every dollar that comes in, you can text Denver Church to 77977. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, hello. Good to see you all wherever this video finds you. I wish I could say good morning to you all. And I was greeting you here at our church building, but nonetheless, you are where you are, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to share with you wherever you find yourself. Right now, at DCC, we're in the middle of a series on transformation and community. And we're doing this series because we really feel at the heart of Denver Community Church is a belief that real community, or church, always embodies a commitment to growth and transformation. It's the heart of what true community is. Hear these words from James Hollis. He says this: community is comprised of individuals who have a transcendent experience, one that lifts each person out of their isolation to participate in transformation. Consider any community. There's a shared history, a shared legacy, common ancestors, or a larger mythic story. There's something bigger than any single person that's shared by everyone. It is this transcendent experience that serves to bond us together. And that, my friends, is what we call community, or the heart of what true community is. Now, during this time, we're going to be looking at the story of Abram. We know him in hindsight as Abraham. And what's so interesting about this story is the story of Abraham goes back to the very beginning of all of the world's major monotheistic religions. Judaism, Islam, and Christianity all have the center, the foundation of their beliefs begin with this one single person. He, in many ways, is a shared patriarch, a shared ancestor for all of us. And so as we think about a series around everywhere and everyone, a commitment to thinking about community and transformation, there might be no greater starting point than beginning with the call of Abraham. Because what we're going to find is this seemingly random person in the ancient world and his family finds himself in an unexpected situation and called into an incredible adventure. Now, wherever you find yourself right now, in light of the pandemic, I imagine the idea of a call to adventure sounds pretty good right now, doesn't it? To be called out, to be sent out, to be able to go anywhere? I think so too. But when it comes to the story of Abraham, he just wasn't called anywhere. He was called into the unknown. This was a very much a disturbing call, one in which he lost all control and all sense of what was familiar. Let's look at Genesis chapter 11, beginning in verse 27. We'll begin our teaching. Genesis 11, 27 through 32. This is the account of Terah's family line. Note that Terah is Abram's father. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. While his father was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans, in the land of his birth. Now, from the very beginning of this text, we see some clues here that are really important to tell us something significant about the story. We're told that the main actor here, whose name is Abram, not Abraham as we know him, tells us that this is a story about transformation. In the hindsight, we know if you grew up in the church or around the church, many of the stories you might have heard center around this sort of origin story, the life of Abraham. But here in the text, we're getting a peek in to Abram, who before any of his encounters with God, before anything unique or special that happened in his life, he was known as Abram. And Abram is on the cusp of a major transformation. Well, we're told in verse 28, while his father Terah was still alive, Haran, Abram's brother, died in Ur of the Chaldeans, the land of his birth. Abram and Nahor went on and both married. And the name of Abram's wife was Sarai. And the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was childless because she was not able to conceive. We're given another clue there in verse 30 that Sarai, Abram's wife, was childless because she was unable to conceive. She was barren. Now, if any of you have ever gone through infertility in your family, or if the spouse or friend have been close to that, you know how painful and hard that is. There's so much loss and grief around the inability to conceive. Hopes lost, dreams shattered. And in the ancient world, for in the case of Abram and Sarai, that the pain goes even further. Because in the ancient world, not to have lineage, not to have a kin to take on the family business, it literally goes to a place beyond grief. It goes to a place of literal security and safety. Who's going to take care of them in their old age? Who's going to see after the family business? This is a deeply, deeply disturbing and difficult reality that really unsettles the very foundation of Abram and Sarai's life and their family. In verse 31, it says that Terah, Abraham's father, took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Now, what we know today of where in the ancient world of where Ur of the Chaldeans was, the place that Terah, Abram's father, was born, and they and their whole household originated, it's close to the headwaters of the Euphrates in what we know as the Persian Gulf, about 400 or 500 miles from Canaan. Now, you think about 400 or 500 miles and how far that would be to be located at the edge of the Persian Gulf, 400 or 500 miles east of the place the place we now know is Israel and Jerusalem. This is an incredible journey. This is an incredible journey that they're about to take on. It goes on, and we hear that that Terah had then died, and he lived to be 205 years old, but he died in that place called Haran. Now, there's no mistake here that this family, as they moved away from Ur of the Chaldeans, their place of stability, the place that they were born, the place where they had settled as a family, they were on the move to this place called Canaan, so far away. But it says that they settled in Haran. Now, if you picked up any clues here in the text, it's not without intention that they ended up settling in a town called Haran. And if you remember right from the beginning of this text, Haran was the name of one of Abram's brothers who had died. You see, there's a hint here that that's no coincidence. They ended up settling in a place of their own pain. It seems as if the loss of Abram's brother, Haran, is so significant that they settle in that place and they never leave. Their family is sort of stuck in that pain. All of these, Abram's, simply his name being Abram, the fact that Sarai was barren and that this story is birthed and into pain, and eventually that we find that this family and this person, Abram, is stuck in this place called Haran, which speaks to the very foundational pain and hurt of their family, speaks that we're in a transformative story. This story is about transformation. Because isn't it the same for us? That oftentimes that God does his best work in our lives, his most important work in our lives, when we become to a place of pain, when we finally come to terms with wounds or pain that we've wanted to ignore in our lives, when we eventually can ignore them no longer, that is where God does his best work. And so we're given clues here in the text that this story hints towards transformation. It's where we find ourselves. Now, what Abram finds himself in is what sociologists often call liminal space. We've talked about this reality at DCC before. Liminal means, it roots from the Latin word limen, or threshold. It means the in-between. A helpful definition here is this. Liminal spaces are transitional or transformative spaces. They are the waiting areas between one point in time and space and the next. This is liminal space for Abram and his family. And little does he know, he's about to be challenged in an incredible way. Let's look at chapter 12, verse 1. It says, almost out of nowhere, the next thing we're told, it says in verse 1, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. And then he says, he gives him a promise. There's a call and then a promise in verse 2. He says, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. There's a challenge and then a promise. Now, this isn't any other challenge. This is so central to the very foundation of the biblical text. Many scholars actually suggest that this is the first time there's ever in world history a recording of a trans-tribal vision. Because what we have to understand is sticking with your family, sticking with your clan, sticking with your tribe, not just in the human psyche, but in the ancient world, was life or death. To leave a place, a geography that was home, or to leave your family was an incredible risky proposition in the ancient world. And here, God says very clearly to Abraham, leave your country, leave your people, and leave your father's household. He's saying, leave your tribe, move beyond, and in doing so, I will bless you. Now, a lot of times in this text, we want to move to all the incredible promises that God makes in those verses about what he's going to do with Abram. But I want to put ourselves in the shoes of Abram and think about what that promise means for him. Think about what a shock it would have been for Abram, or when he went back and spoke to his wife Sarai and said, hey, I think God's calling us to go to this place called Canaan, a far-off land. We need to keep going, and he's going to bless us. And the promise to his promise to me is that we're going to birth multitudes, and they're going to be a blessing to the world. And whoever blesses you will be blessed, and whoever curses you will be cursed. This is an incredible promise. But imagine how that would fall in the ears of Sarai, who has been reckoning with the fact that she's barren and unable to produce life. Imagine coming to terms with that and what that would mean to hear something so audacious, something so disturbing, after you've maybe finally, over years and years, have tried to make peace in pleading with God in the reality of being barren. I think in many ways this would feel like an offense. And isn't that often the ways that we often, our transformation stories begin? It begins in a place of pain. What seems like such an epic story here becomes so incredibly personal. This call to leave their tribe is the tribe, we have to know, is a place of safety. It's a place of security. And it's this for Abram and Sarai is clearly a time of liminality, as we talked about. This is an in-between space. Now, we often want to rush to the blessings and the promises and the going of Abraham, but I think this text is calling us to pause right here. Let me tell you why. Right now, globally, we're in the midst of a global pandemic, as you all know. And I really believe that right now in our culture, in your life, in my life, and in the lives of everyone we know, we're in an incredibly liminal space. We're in a threshold moment because we know we've left one world, one reality, that I imagine if you're like me, you might even have a hard time even remembering exactly what was going on in our minds and what our daily lives looked like maybe 30 or 40 days ago, before this reality. But we also can't really see the future, right? We can't really know where this is all headed. I mean, we have some suspicions and everyone has an opinion. Just get on Facebook, you'll know. There's so many opinions out there, but the reality is I think we have been stripped of control and we're in an incredibly liminal space, a place of tension, a place of unknowing. And very much like Abram, who's being called into the strange, that which is not familiar, that which is unknown, we too have to hold the tension of this liminal space. Now, Abram has to make a really big decision here. And what I want to say to you today, which I think is really important advice, is that I would be really reluctant to make really big decisions in a dark place. Years ago, at the beginning of my marriage, my wife had a dear friend and mentor who said to her, never make a huge decision in a dark space. And I think for many of us, perhaps most of us, we're in a really big dark space right now. Emotionally, this whole time is really hard. Relationally, it's difficult because we're disconnected from those that we love and care about, and we feel stuck. Much like Abram and his family, perhaps, stuck, settled in Haran, a place of death, stuck with the reminder and the bitterness of the difficulties that they've faced, we too feel in many ways stuck. And I don't think wisdom tells us that it's a good time to make really big life decisions right now. Now, some of you have to make decisions because you've lost a job, you've lost some income, and you have to get strategic and you have to do it quick. And I understand that. And if that's your reality, bless you and I pray grace for you. But if you can avoid making really big life decisions right now, I want to remind you today that we are in a dark place and perhaps wisdom would say, go patiently and go carefully in this time. Because many have called this moment, and I want to affirm this idea of being an apocalypse. Now, apocalypse is actually a biblical word that's rooted in the Greek. And our pop culture has made that word a lot of things. When we think of apocalyptic, we think of end of the world films, right? We think of cataclysms that are global events, some asteroid hitting Earth or some kind of, you know, third world war. But the true sense of apocalypse is not just about cataclysm. It actually gets to this idea of what we call revelation. It's a revealing and it's an exposing. The word apocalypsis says this, it's defined as an unveiling or an unfolding of things not previously known and which could not be known apart from the unveiling. I think right now, globally, here in Denver, Colorado, in your family, in your living room, wherever you call home, within your friends, in your networks, we are all caught up in an apocalyptic moment in the truest sense of the word. We are caught up into a great unveiling. And I think things are being made known in this critical liminal space. And it deserves our attention. It deserves our careful attention. Rather than moving on so quickly, because we all want to move on, don't we? We all want to move on to when are the sheltering going to be lifted? You can't get there fast enough in many ways. We're so eager to work, so eager to produce, so eager to be let out of our homes. And yet I think this moment, this apocalyptic moment, is revealing things globally, in our communities, and perhaps most importantly, inside of us. And I think this text calls us, much like Abram, to become introspective, to pause and reflect. Because in many ways, I think this moment is like a proverbial break for all of us in our hearts and our minds and certainly our economy. And so right now, out of necessity, and it's really important that we're talking about ventilators and personal protective equipment and stimulus checks, and all things are being revealed. We're learning all sorts of things we wouldn't otherwise know. And things are being revealed about our economy, about injustice, about how this pandemic falls differently on different classes, different races. And all of that's really, really important. And you know what? For years and years to come, we are going to do research about this time. We're going to learn so much is being revealed in this moment. But I think with all the chatter and social media and opinions that fly, and so much that's in our faces, what we could miss is an opportunity to get curious about what's being revealed inside of us. So perhaps the question for us is not what's being revealed out there, but what's being revealed in here. What's being exposed in you that might cause you to resist the call and a stir of God in your own life? Much like Abram, I can't imagine the kind of tensions he was holding to think about going into this place of unknown after being revealed to so much pain and so much brokenness. But I think that is the path. It is the unavoidable story that we're all caught up in To grow and be transformed is to face our pain, to face our hurts, and to look them square in the eyes and by God's grace, dig in a little bit. What I think about the things that Abram would have had to surrender in being known and having a reputation. What would it mean to leave his brother? The fears he would have about resisting the call of God on his life because he could easily justify wanting to be there for his brother who's lost so much. What would it mean to separate from his family, those who gave him security, already in a vulnerable person, not knowing, and everything, all the evidence seems to suggest he'll never have kids of his own. What that would mean, the tensions he's holding, the fears that must have gripped him. What today might you be called to surrender? What might you be called to consider in your own life that prevents God from stirring in you and moving you in this season? We all want to move on from this season, but perhaps right now is the time to pause and reflect. See, we're told in verse 1 of chapter 12, when Abram's called to go from your country, your people, and your father's household and land, this was a threat to Abram's very identity. But it also threatened his sense of family. You see, Abram was stuck in this place of Haran, this place of pain, because of what he had experienced and what had been done to him. And this idea to be called out on your own, for God to call Abram to step out, to stand on his own after his own father's death. Now, his father has died, and so it's not a literal sense of betraying his father. It's far more metaphorical. What does it mean to step out from your family's reputation, to stand out from who your father was or your parents were, and to stand on your own? This is a call by God to grow up. It's a call towards maturity. It's a call toward growth. And for all of us, oftentimes, to move into the next season of life, to take responsibility for our own lives and who we are, we need to be able to face those same sorts of things. You see, we often think of this idea of being, the call to leave our family oftentimes happens when we get married, or maybe after high school or after college, when we leave our parents. We think it's simple as separation physically, but physical separation is actually just the beginning. For many of us, we are always reckoning with and trying to undo ourselves from the reputations, the expectations of the family that we grew up in. This is not a bad thing. It doesn't have to be a bad legacy. It can actually be a beautiful legacy, but growth and transformation means being able to stand on our own. James Hollis speaks about it this way. He talks about the process of what it means and growing up in his book, The Middle Passage. He says this, "This is why Jung," speaking of the great psychologist Carl Jung, "this is why Jung observed that the greatest burden that the child must bear is the unlived life of the parent." Just think about that for a moment. For all of us, the greatest burden that the child must bear is the unlived life of the parent. Oftentimes in our own process of growth and transformation, it's facing the expectation. It's actually finally facing the attachments and the burdens that we carry from our family of origin that is the impetus of our growth to a next season in life. This is what hurries us on, but it's only when we take a hard look at it. In the same passage, Jung continues, and he says, "The capacity for growth for all of us depends on one's ability to internalize and to take personal responsibility. If we forever see our life as a problem caused by others, a problem to be solved, then no change will ever occur." You see, Abram is being called to unattach himself from his family. He's being called to grow up. He's being called to take responsibility. I'm sure that Abram could spend lots and lots of time cursing God, much like his wife Sarai, for their being barren and infertile. And God is saying, "I'm calling you out of that. That's the season we've been in, and it's been important, and the grief is not going away, but we're going this way." What a pivotal moment. And I don't think this is just a pivotal moment, as I've said before, just for Abram. I think this is a moment that we all face in our lives, a time where we have to move on, where we're called to finally reckon with the pain that we don't want to touch. What this comes down to, essentially, is a call to trust. It's a call to trust. Right now in our world, there's so much to be anxious about. There's so much to worry about, and you can feel the anxiety on social media and even in our families. I'm sure you've felt that in your conversations with family and friends. There's so much coming at us. What will this look like? When will we be able to go out? What's happening? We so are desperate for information and control about tomorrow, but perhaps in this moment, much like Abraham, who needed to respond to God's call and promise, he had to take a hard look at his life and circumstances. He had to make a conscious choice to consider what he was willing to surrender to respond to God's call. And I think for many of us, we feel the same way. Maybe it's hard right now to actually remember the burdens you were carrying before the pandemic, what occupied your mind and heart before this unusual and uncertain time. But if you have not, ask yourself, do I want to go back to the way things were? Was what was normal actually serving me well? What is being revealed in you during this time? What might you need to let go of in this season in order to eventually move forward? And what might God be stirring in you? And can you say yes to that stirring without surrendering something, without a release or a letting go of some of the anxieties and uncertainties you're carrying? I want to encourage you now, as we transition in this time, to quiet your mind and body and to be still and aware of God's presence within and all around.